All right, Rebbe, say good morning. Good morning. Let us begin. First of all, good tovach. Hopefully everybody had a meaningful Shabbos, and it's a great source to be able to continue a new week of Limud together. A beautiful, beautiful daf ahead of us today. Today's daf is Tes Zayin, and 16, and we are going to pick up on 15b at the two dots, which is 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, excuse me, 10 lines up from the bottom, 15b. I was shared this morning to begin by thanking our sponsors, our Talmud Torah sponsor for the month of Adar, the Lerner Mishpacha in memory of Mrs. Dina Lerner Gerber, Dina Bas Yehuda, the week of learning dedicated by Paul and Kathy Pollack, in memory of Paul's grandparents, Zachariah Ben Zachariah and Dina Bas Pesach, Jack Bennett, for dedicating the week of learning today in memory of Captain Duror Barashi, who served as a deputy company commander in the 51st Battalion of the Golani Brigade. Duror died in Lebanon in a firefight with Hezbollah on the 12th of October in 1995. We thank Jack for that meaningful, meaningful dedication. And Dafyomi this morning is dedicated this morning by Ellen Kahan and Jack Zager in memory of Ellen's father, Sammy Kahan Shlomo Ben Reb David HaKohen Zichron Levrach. We hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah, all of the neshamas will have an aliyah and the families a nechama. And Rabbosei, with that, let us begin. So two dots, Tes Vav Amud Beis. Remember again, just to reorient ourselves a little bit, we're still holding in the sugya regarding the 18 enactments, the Yud Ches Takonis that were made in the attic of Hananya ben Chizkiya. So we're going through each of them. Remember again, all the Mishnah tells us is that there were 18, but it's up to us to kind of try to, well, not up to us. The Gemara tries to figure out what comprises those 18. So now we continue. So amongst the list, Klisruchis, remember again, one of them was that Klisruchis glass is mekabel tumo. So says the Gemara, Klisruchis, my time ago, Zubu Rabbanan tumo. Why is it that by glass, the rabbis legislated that it should be makabel tumah? Rabbos, remember again, the interesting part about glass is that glass is not mentioned in the Torah, obviously. Glass is not mentioned in the Torah. So there's an interesting discussion. The truth is, this is very nogea v'hilchos Pesach as well, which gets into the fundamental shailas regarding going ahead and kashering glass. So we'll see this sugya in Yeretz Hashem in Avodah Zarah. There's a multiple way machlokes in terms of how we treat glass. But here the Gemara is saying, why is it that although biblically glass is not mekabel tumah, that the rabbis legislated that it should be mekabel tumah? So we'll see, very interesting. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Reish Lakish, Hoyel utchilas priyasa min achol, shavin rabbanu kekliharas. Since glass is made from sand, so essentially glass is made from the earth, so therefore, again, Chazal decided to give it the same status as earthenware. Since both earthenware and glass are made from the earth, glass made from sand, therefore, halacha lamaisa, they gave it the halachos of an earthenware vessel. And just like an earthenware vessel is mekabel tumah, so to glass will be mekabel tumah as well. Aye, so if that's the case, that glass is like earthenware. If that's the case, that glass is like earthenware, then I should say that just like earthenware does not have any tara, cannot be purified in a mikvah, so to what? So too, glass should not be purified in the mikvah as well. But we know that's not true. Alama Tanan, why is it that learned in the Mishnah? Ve'ilu chotzitzin bekelim. These are the items we're also, remember again, in general, when it comes to immersion in a mikvah. So in order for an item to be fully purified through its immersion, it can have no chatzisa, nothing interposing between the object and the water. The truth is, we know this again by tefillah of people, right? So contemporarily, this applies in Hilchos Nidom and goes to the mikvah. She has to make sure there's nothing on her body interposing between her and the water. But the truth is, it applies to kelim also. The truth is, we'll say, we know this from tevilas kelim. You go to the mikvah, if you leave a sticker on the kli, it could go ahead and invalidate the immersion. So says the Mishnah, Elu chotitzin bekelim. These are items that serve as a chatzis, an interposition. Hazefes v'hamar b'kli zchuchis. So if you have literally, again, a little bit, zefes literally is pitch, and mar is literally musk. So if you have a little bit of these items on a glass item, it serves as a chatzitza for the mikvah. So I'll say, so what do you see? What do you see from here? You see from here that halacha lamaisa, glass can be purified in a mikvah. One second. If you just told me that the rabbis enacted that glass should be makabel tuma because glass is like earthenware, because both are made from the earth, then if that's true, then just like earthenware cannot be purified in a mikvah, glass shouldn't be purified in a mikvah. Yet we see that glass can be purified in a mikvah. So what's going on over here? So what's a fascinating answer? What's the case here? The case over here is where you had a glass item. And Abba said, then what happened? There was that glass was pierced. The glass was pierced. And as a result of the glass being pierced, so what occurred ultimately was what? What occurred ultimately was, looks like Ari Ullman is sitting in my house with me right now. Mamish, I'm not, okay, good. Amazing what you could do with Zoom backgrounds. So I am here. I just want to point out that I'm here. So the Gemara says as follows. So what happened? The glass itself was pierced. The glass itself was pierced. And you plugged the glass with a piece of metal. You plugged the glass with a piece of metal. So I'll say, so now watch this. The Gemara's Rabbi Meir, he da'amar ha'kol holich achar ha'maimid. And this reflects the view of Rabbi Meir who holds that I will say, when you have a utensil and the utensil has a hole and that hole is plugged with an item, so halacha lemaisa, that item becomes the defining characteristic of the kli. So for example, if you have a glass vessel that has a hole and is plugged with metal, essentially because it's the metal that allows it to function as a kli, therefore halacha lemaisa, the utensil takes on the identity of a metallic kli. So the Gemara now is suggesting that Mishnah that said, was speaking about immersion of a glass vessel, was speaking about an immersion of a glass vessel that had a hole. The hole was plugged with metal, and therefore Rabbi Meir holds that when you plug a utensil with a particular material, whatever you plug the utensil with, that becomes the defining identity of the kli, because it's that plug that allows the kli to function as a kli. So if you have a glass utensil which has a hole and you plug it with metal, it now becomes a metallic kli, and that's why we're talking about immersion. But I'll say just one more important dedication. Sorry, our dedications are a little bit back and forth because we didn't have Shira on Shabbos. But I want to thank Tali and Michelle Strum for dedicating the Dafyomi in honor of a birth of a granddaughter to their children. We wish the Strums an incredible Mazel Tov and hope that this little girl grows up to be a true Bas Yisrael and that her parents and their grandparents and extended Mishpach are Zocha to see beautiful generations of Nachas from her. Mazel Tov to the Strums. So with that, let us continue. So the Gemara says, "Disanya," because we learned, Rabbi Meir metame vechachamim metaren. Good. So we'll say, so therefore again, that's the way we go ahead and we explain away that Mishnah that deals with immersion of a glass utensil. But still, remember, let's take a step back. We're still stuck with the idea that here's what we know. The rabbis legislated tumah for a glass utensil. Even though midaraisa that is not true, the rabbi said it should be tameh. We're trying to figure out why that is. So remember, we're still going with the assumption over here that the reason that glass is mekabel tumah is because glass is comparable to earthenware. Just like earthenware comes from the earth, glass comes from the earth. Just like earthenware is mekabel tumah, glass is mekabel tumah. But we see a Mishnah that speaks about immersing glass, tvilas kilim for glass. That's a separate case. That's where the glass was pierced, plugged with a piece of metal, reflects the view of Rabbi Meir, that whenever you plug a utensil with a particular material, that material becomes the defining identity of the utensil. Good. Elamiata, top of test, Zayin Odalev. But I will say, based on this, Elamiata, Litmu Migabon. Lo Litmu Migabon. Well, remember again, one of the interesting parts about an earthenware utensil is that halacha lemaisa, it only contracts tuma and only conveys tuma from inside the airspace of the utensil. That's a klicheres, right? So a klicheres can become tamei if something is lowered into its airspace, even if it doesn't touch the walls, and it could convey tuma to something that enters into its airspace. But a klicheres cannot become tamei if something tummy touches the outside of the utensil. So for example, if you were to take a sheretz and you were to put that sheretz on the outside of the utensil, it would not convey tumah. To which the Gemara says, so if that's the case, if you're comparing glass to a kli cheres, lo litmu migabon, ultimately, the kli cheres also, the kli zchuchis, the glass, should not become tame from anything that comes in contact on the outside of the kli. Yet, alamatanan, why does it say, kli cheres u kli neser, tumasan shave? Yet, Rabbi said we learned that a kli cheres, which is an earthenware utensil, kli neser, Rashi says, is min adama levana, is another type of earthenware, vessel. What's the halacha? Tumasan shave. Their tuma is comparable. In what sense? Mitamin u mitamon mi avirehen. So ultimately, again, they could become tame, and they could convey tuma from their airspace. U mitamin me acharehen. Similarly, Rabbi said the halacha is they could become tame. Now me acharehen means as follows. Rashi points out over here that what this is referring to is the following situation. So imagine for a moment you have, the truth is you find this all the time, like let's say with glasses. So if you have a glass and the glass has a stem, so let's say, and then the stem rests on a base. If you turn over the glass and you see the base, there's usually like a cavity inside of that base. So kli cheres has the ability to become tame through something that comes in contact with that cavity as well. So essentially a kli cheres can become tame either from something that ultimately is lowered into its airspace or in the cavity underneath the stem. However, it cannot become tame from anything that comes in contact on the backside of the kli. So for example, again, I should say on the outside of the kli. So like we said before, if the sheretz goes ahead or any other item of tumah touches the outside of the kli cheres, it does not become tame. So ve'im etamin megabehen, ushvi rasan mitar rasan. And ultimately, again, if you break the kli and then refashion it, it could once again become tahar. So the Gemara says, what do you see from here? It's kli neser u kli cheres hu de tumasan shava. So you see that when the Mishnah makes the list of items that are comparable, it's only what? Kli cheres and kli neser. What's missing from this list? Avamidi achrin alo. Ultimately, Rabbi Yossi, what's missing from this list? Glass is missing from this list. So you see from here that halacha lemaisa, glass is not like kli cheres. So we'll say what the Gemara is driving at is as follows. We know that one of the 18 enactments is that glass is mekabel tuma. That's what we know. We're trying to figure out why. So the suggestion that the Gemara is now floating is because glass is like kli cheres. How is glass like kli cheres? Just like kli cheres is fashioned from the adama, so too glass is fashioned from the adama as well. To which the Gemara says, but I don't understand. If you're then going to compare glass to kli cheres, then they should be comparable on every level. So if that's the case, when the Mishnah says over here, talking about like items, similar items, the Mishnah is only including kli cheres and kli neser and telling us that they share similarities, namely that they only convey and contract tuma from their airspace, do not go, and also from the cavity inside the bottom of the kli, but do not convey or contract tuma from the outside of the kli. And yet glass is missing from this list, which seems to indicate to us that glass is not like kli cheres. To which the Gemara says, the Gemara says, you're right. The difference is, so now Rabbi said the Gemara is making a different suggestion. Maybe it's that halacha lemaisa, glass is like metal. Why is glass like metal? Because Rabbi say, if you were to go ahead and take glass, if you look at Rashi says over here, Yesh lam takana, Rashi says, lahasichon ulachzra lahasosan kelim. We'll say if you were to take a metal utensil and it was to become tame, and you were to, let's say, reforge that utensil, you melt it down, you remake it, ultimately, again, halacha lemaisa, once you destroy the kli and you remake it, it loses its initial tumah. Glass is similar to that as well. That halacha lemaisa, if you have glass, if you could go ahead and remake glass, and therefore the Gemara is suggesting that glass is like metallic utensils. That's why it's mekabel tuma. Just like metal is mekabel tuma, so too glass is mekabel tuma. To which the Gemara says, "Well, 1 second, elame ato yachser l'tuma asin yishanik eklimatachos." Aye, but if that's the case, then what? Then Rabbi says it should go ahead and regain its old tuma, like metal utensils. Then Rabbi said, now what does this mean? If you take a look at Rashi here for just a moment, so Rashi says like this, Tumasan Yishana, Nitmu, what's it talking about now? Metallic utensils. If you have a metal utensil and it became Tameh, Vinikvu, and then ultimately what happens? The utensil is pierced, Vitaru, V'chazar V'asam Ehen Kelim, Yachzaru L'tumas Lat Inon Tvila, Holy Klimatachusim. So we'll say, let's make a statement and then we'll explain it in just a moment. So we'll say, the halacha is as follows. If you have a metal utensil and that metal utensil became tummy, and now you pierce that utensil in a way that it's no longer usable, once the kli is no longer usable, then halacha lamaisa, it loses its tumah. That's the halacha. Now we're going to see that the halacha, however, then evolved and said, but if you go ahead and repair that utensil, once you repair it, it regains its old tumah. Now, we'll say, obviously, you can get rid of the tumah by kashering the kli or by tovaling the kli. But lamaisa, this is very interesting. So when you pierce the kli and it's no longer usable, it loses its tumah. Then when you repair it, it regains its former tumah. So says the Gemara. So if you're going to now tell me that halacha lamaisa, glass is like metal, so the same halacha should apply to glass. And Rabbi said, now watch this. This nun. Let's talk about metal for just a moment. This nun. Before we learned, klimatachos, when it comes to metal utensils, pshuteyen omikablehen tmeyen. Rabbi said, by metal utensils, whether the utensil, pshuteyen means a flat utensil. So a flat utensil or a utensil with a receptacle, like with a cavity, both are tmeyen. Both, right, have the ability to be makabel tumah. Nishbaru, if you broke the kli. Now, we'll say, understand, break doesn't have to literally mean break. What else could break mean? Break means just that you render the kli useless. If the kli is no longer really usable, taru, ultimately the kli becomes tame. Chazer v'asem en kelim, but if you then went and repaired the metallic kli, chazru l'tum asan yishana, it regains its old tumah. So we don't know why this is yet. We'll see. We don't know, but we know that this is a fact. So I have a metallic kli that becomes tame. So we'll say, so now what happens? I break it, meaning I render it useless. I make a hole in it so big that it's no longer really usable. So it loses the tumah. When I then reforge it or repair it, the Rabbanan said, it regains its tumah. Tumah yishan, it regains its old tumah. The ilu gabi kli zchuchis tanan, yet when it comes to glass, we said what? Kli eitz ukli ar ukli etzem ukli zchuchis. We'll say if you have a wooden utensil, literally utensil made of leather, utensil made of bone or glass, pshutei and tahorin. So first of all, if it's a flat utensil without what we call a base kibul, a cavity, so first of all, such utensil made of these materials isn't mekabel tumah. The Gemara says, pshutei and tahorin umekablei and tmein. But if these utensils, if you have a utensil made out of these materials, and the utensil does have a cavity, it is tamei. Nishperu, if the utensil is broken, taro, ultimately again, it loses its tumah. Chazer va'asam ehen kelim. And Rabbi say, but if you repaired the kli after it was broken, mekablin tuma mikan ulehaba. The kli once again is able to contract tuma from this point going forward. Now, what do you see from here? What's the diuk? Mikan ulehaba in lemafreya lo. That teaches us from this point forward, yes, but it does not regain its old tuma once it's repaired. So Rabbi say, now watch this. So just see what's happened over here. Let's contrast. Let's just keep this focused right now on metal and glass. Remember, just so you follow the progression. So here's what we know. Glass is makabel tumah midrabanan. We're trying to figure out why that is. So at first we assume that's because glass is like earthenware. Just like earthenware comes from the earth, glass is made from sand, comes from the earth. Just like earthenware is makabel tumah, glass is makabel tumah. Now we pointed out that at the end of the day, that comparison doesn't really seem to hold up all that well. So we switch gears. Maybe glass is like metal. Glass is like metal. So the Gemara says, but if that's the case, if that glass is like metal, then halacha lemaisa, the halacha by metal is if you have a metallic utensil, which became tamei, you then, quote unquote, destroyed it, i.e. rendered it unusable, loses its tumah. If you then repair it, the halacha is the tumah yishana, the old tumah, comes back to the kli. Yet by glass, we see that is not the case. If you have a glass, utensil that has a cavity, and it's mekabel tuma, or it's a receptacle that is mekabel tuma, then you break it, quote unquote. Then, right, it loses its tuma, then you repair it. The halacha is that the glass, once again, can be mekabel tuma, but it does not regain its tuma yeshana. So how can you tell me that glass is like metal? Metal regains its tuma yeshana. Glass does not. So what's happening over here? To which the Gemara says very simply, to which the Gemara says, Tumas kli zuchuchis drabana. Remember, I will say, one thing everyone agrees with is what? That the ability for glass to be makabel tuma is only midrabana. It's rabbinic. Tuma yeshana drabana. The Rabbi will say, the idea that a utensil, after being broken and then repaired, regains its old tuma, is also a din dirabanan. So Rabbi said, therefore the Gemara says, the tuma yishana dirabanan, bituma da'araisa achisu barabanan tuma. So Rabbi said, when we're dealing with an item that has biblical tuma, that's when the rabbis imposed their rabbinic legislation regarding tuma yishana. But on something that is only rabbinically tummy to begin with, the rabbis will not impose another level of rabbinic tumma. So very simply, essentially what this means is as follows. A metal utensil has the ability to makabel tumma midoraisa. So in a case like that, where the tumma is doraisa, and then the metal kli is broken, and then repaired, that's where Chazal legislated that we're going to put back the tuma yishana onto the kli, onto the metallic kli. Because that's a kli that has a tuma doraisa. So when you have a kli that has a tuma doraisa, and then it lost it, and then you repair it, so the Rabbanon put on the tuma yishana. But a glass utensil, which we will say everybody is agreeing to begin with, is only a tuma dirabanan. So once that kli is quote-unquote destroyed and then repaired, the rabbis did not legislate that the tuma yeshana goes back onto the kli schuchis. So therefore, Rabbi will say, it is possible that in its essence, the glass utensil is still comparable to the matachas, to the metallic utensil. It just happens to be in this issue of tuma yeshana returning. That's another level of rabbinic legislation. So to go ahead and put another level of rabbinic legislation upon a glass utensil, which from the beginning is only drabanon, is multiple layers of rabbinic law. Masha'inkin by a metal utensil, which contracts tuma doraisa, that's when you'll put the rabbinic legislation of tuma yeshana back on it. But in essence, the comparison between a metal utensil and a glass utensil could still remain intact. So the Gemara says, one second, pshutehen mihu litame, the pshute kli matachos daraisenenu. But on the second boss, why is it that, look at Rashi for just a moment, pshutehen mihu litame, but why don't we say that a flat glass utensil should at least become tame? Or is about, I understand. Okay, tuma yeshana, I get. But remember again, in the list before we said that only a glass utensil with a cavity becomes tame. A flat glass utensil does not become tame. But why? If you're comparing glass to metal, right? Just like a flat metal utensil is mekabel tuma, so why don't we say that a flat glass utensil will become tame as well? To look at Rashi, pshutein mi li tame ki kli matachos, ta pshute kli matachos doraisa, v'cheivan d'chavasinu shavinu li tame d'leka l'shinei b'had k'shinei b'tum yishana. So we'll say, so again, fine. So I understand why a glass utensil, even after it's repaired, will not reacquire its tumi yishana. Good. But if you're telling me that glass is like metal, so why don't they say that just like a flat metal utensil is mekabel tuma, so to a flat glass utensil is mekabel tuma as well? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. To which the Gemara says, Dahab Shulikim does, Nino avdi behu rabbanon hekira, ki hechi dilo lisrof alayu tshuma vekachim. Because they will say, what happened was, is the rabbis had to make a distinction between metal and glass, and they had to show that as much as glass is mekabel tuma, you would not burn truma and kachim, which come in contact with a glass utensil, which became tami. Look at Rashi. Avdi rabbanan nekira, bitumas kli schuchis, chilku ba mituma da'oraisa, lohodia shihi medivrayem, velo yisrefu ala truma v'kachim, delo sarfi truma mishum tuma drabana. So we'll remember again, the halacha is as follows. As much as we're going to say that a glass utensil is mekabel tuma midrabanan, That is true. Again, I will say, that's a fact. We just don't yet know exactly why that is. So is it because it's like an earthenware vessel, a metal utensil? But one thing is very important, which is because the tuma of glass is dirabanan, we will not burn truma and mice, truma and kodshim that comes in contact with glass, which is tame. The only time you go out and you burn truma and kodshim is when it has come in contact with tuma de oraisa. But for example, if you were to have contact between a glass utensil, which became tame, and truma and kodshim, so the truma and kodshim would become pasul, but you would not burn the truma and kodshim which came with the glass. So in order to show that that is the case, the rabbis had to somehow be mechalik with glass. So one of the ways that they showed that glass was rabbinic and not biblical was pshute klei zchuchis. Flat glass utensils are not mekabel tuma. When a person sees that and they realize, one second, flat metal utensils are mekabel tuma. Flat glass utensils are not mekabel tuma. What does that show you? That shows you that glass is only mekabel tuma midirabanan. And why is that important to know? To teach me that if for some reason my truma or my kodshim came in contact with glass, that was tameh, I would not go ahead and burn these items. Rather, I would just have to set them aside for non-use. Amid days. Shabbos says, so far what we have is as follows. What we know is that glass is mekabel tuma midrabanan. That's what we know. Glass is mekabel tuma midrabanan. We so far have two approaches in trying to understand this. Either because glass is like klei cheres, it's like earthenware vessel, or, and that's what, in that they're both made from the earth, or it's like a klimatachos, or it's like a metal vessel, in that both could be melted down and reforged. So now, Bosse comes along Rav Ashi, Amud Beis. So Rav Ashi says, in reality, schuchis, glass, is like a klicheres. We're going back now, I'll say to what we said before, that in reality, the reason why a klicheres is mekabel tuma is because it is similar to an earthenware vessel. In what sense? Just like an earthenware vessel is made from the earth, so too glass made from sand is also made from the earth. So we'll say, remember again, one of the problems we had with the comparison between glass and earthenware was that if you're going to make that comparison, it falls short. How so? Earthenware cannot go ahead and become tame, nor could it convey tuma from the exterior of the kli. So just imagine for a moment, you have an earthenware cup, right? An earthenware cup. So that earthenware cup can become tame and convey tuma from its interior, from its airspace, even if the item does not touch the walls, but from the airspace. But it cannot convey tuma or go ahead and contract tuma from anything that comes in contact with the exterior of the kli. Yet by kli zchuchis, by glass, we saw that that was not the case. By glass, we saw that halacha lemaisa, it can, quote-unquote, contract tuma from the exterior of the kli. To which the Gemara says, that's not a kashya. The Gemara says, udika kashya lecha lo litmu migabon. But that's what you said before, that if glass is really like kli chares, it should not go ahead and become tame from the exterior. Yet we said before that glass can become tame from the exterior. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you the distinction. Hoil vinira tocho kibaro. We'll say it's interesting. Because glass is clear, there's no real distinction between the interior and the exterior. So really quite a fascinating answer. So the Gemara says, really glass is like earthenware. This is Rav Ashi. This is the reason why glass contracts tuma is because glass is like earthenware. And the only reason why glass, unlike earthenware, can contract tuma, even if a davar hatame comes in contact with the exterior of the utensil, is because by glass, there is no real interior or exterior. Because it's all clear, therefore the interior and the exterior are like one. But halacha lemaisa, Rav Ashi wants to say that the identity of glass, legabe tuma, is really gleaned or is really connected to kli cheres. Incredible. So the Gemara goes like this. Therefore, again, that's halacha lemaisa glass. So therefore, one of the 18 enactments is that glass is mekabel tuma, and it appears based on the conclusion of the Gemara that is because glass is comparable to to kli charis, to earthenware vessel. Just as earthenware vessels are fashioned from the earth, so too glass is fashioned from the earth as well. Good, we go weiter. Shimon ben Shetach tikin ksuva l'isha. So as remember, as you saw in the Mishnah, Shimon ben Shetach instituted ksuva. I will say, and remember again, we pointed out Rashi already explained, that's not totally, meaning it's true. Shimon ben Shetach didn't actually legislate ksuva. Ksuva was legislated before him. What Shimon ben Shetach legislated was that it used to be that a man had the ability to go ahead and make the ksuva payable from a particular identified property. Right? You'll collect your ksuva from this. And let's say he would be miyachid. He would identify and set aside a particular parcel of land. The problem with that was what? Is that if a husband and a wife would get into a fight, husband could easily dismiss his wife, you know, divorce his wife. And he would say, fine, take the property. What Shimon Shetach wanted to do was to kind of slow down the divorce process. And what he said was, you cannot go ahead and identify a particular piece of property for the ksuva. Rather, the ksuva lien devolves upon a man's entire estate. So because that, it takes a bit more time to untangle the marriage. So therefore, again, so that's what it means, seeking ksuva. The gazer tuma akli matachos. Furthermore, Shimon ben Shetach legislated that metal utensils should become tameh. To which the Gemara says, "What? Kli matachos daraisininu? What are you talking about? Shimon ben Shetach didn't go ahead and legislate that metal utensils should become tameh. In fact, God did that. HaKadosh Baruch Hu did that. Dichsev aches hazaves hakesef." So let's say, remember again, what do you mean that Shimon ben Shetach legislated that metal utensils should become tameh? The Torah HaKadosh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'kvodo ba'atzmo, did this himself. To which the Gemara says, what does this mean? Ela l'tumah yishana. Rabbi say, this goes back to something that halacha l'maisa we said before, which is old tumah. So let's say, remember again, like we said before, the Amrav Yehuda Amrav. Rabbi say, so just before we get into this, remember, we just spoke about tumah yishana. Tumah yishana means, just you'll see where this came up. You'll see the origin of this. But we actually spoke about this in Amud Aleph. So remember again, if you have a metal utensil, and the metal utensil becomes tumah, and then what happens? You go ahead and you quote-unquote break it. Now, break it, of course, doesn't literally mean break it. Break it means you just simply render it unusable. What happens when you render it unusable? It loses its identity as utensil. Once it loses its identity as utensil, then halacha lemaaseh, it loses its tumah. The rabbis legislated that if you then subsequently repair that metal utensil, the old tumah yishana, comes back to the utensil. Now we're going to see why that is and in what situation that legislation was created. We'll say, here we go. Dam Rav Yehuda Amarav, Maisa b'Shaltzion HaMalka. I will say there was an episode with Shaltzion HaMalka. This was her name, Shaltzion. And I will say, now remember, this is actually going to link back to a story we're familiar with. Look at Rashi, Shaltzion b'mei Shimon ben Shetach Haisa. Ultimately, again, she lived during the days of Shimon ben Shetach. Now, she didn't just live during the days of Shimon ben Shetach. Shaltzion was the sister of Shimon ben Shetach, and she was the wife of Yanai the king. Now, remember back to Brachos. We had the story where Yanai wiped out or killed out a lot of the rabbis, and then he had a burning desire to bench. Right, to bench b'mezumen, or to have benching led by someone. You remember again, his wife said to him that he was so upset that there were no rabbis to help him with benching. So his wife said to him, if I find you a rabbi, do you promise not to kill him? So Yanai said, of course. And remember again, so again, in that story, the queen is not named by name. She's just identified as the wife of Yanai. But that was Shaltzion HaMalka. And remember again, the rabbi that she produced was none other than her brother, Shimon ben Shetach. So this story apparently takes place after the death of Yanai. Yanai died. Shaltzion is the queen, and she is the reigning monarch. So what happens? Sha'asasa mishta libna. She made a party for her son. Whatever the metzias of the party was, she made a party for her son. Now we'll say what happened. The nitmu kol kelel. So this is incredible. Somehow, either right before the party or during the party, all of her kelim became tame. So we'll say, so you'll see to yourself, how could such a thing happen? So it's pretty simple. How could such a thing happen? Somebody died. Somebody died, right? Somebody died, there's tumas ohel, and that conveys tumas to everything. So mamish, big problem. She's about to make this big party. All of the kelim became tamei. So she has a great chap. Vishabartan, she quote unquote broke all of the kelim. Unisanasan litzoreif v'rischan. So what did she do? So she broke all of the kelim. Broke, again, remember, break means render them unusable. She then gave it to the silversmith, and he went ahead, or to the goldsmith, whatever it was, and he remade them. Va'asa mehem kelim chadashim, and they made brand new kelim. So Shalzion was a shtikel tam tchacham. So she said, okay, not a problem. Let's just render all of the utensils unfit. Fix them again, right? So remember again, render them unfit. What happens? What happens to the tumah? Once you render it unfit, then what? The tumah is gone. Remake them, and now they're usable, totally tar. And I will say, remember again, so you don't have to take them to the mikvah or anything. Just render them unfit. Tumah goes away. Fix them. Brand new utensils. And halacha lemaaseh, you're good to go. The amru chachamim, and I will say, as a result of this episode, while this was happening, the chachamim said, Yachzuru l'tumasan yishana. If you do something like this, the old tumah comes back. So we'll say, so what Chazal said as a result of this story is that halacha l'maisa, if you got and you have utensils which were tameh, you broke the utensils, quote unquote, broke the utensils, took away the tumah, and then reforged them. Chazal legislated that the tumah yishana, the old tumah, comes back. To which the Gemara says, why? Why do they do this? My time, huh? Mishum geder mechatas naguba. They did this ultimately again. It was because what we call geder mechatas. Look at Rashi. Geder mechatas nimtzu mechatas betelim she'in lecha adam mamtin zayniam el shavran umishtachach toras mechatas. I will say this is incredible. Chazal were concerned that what's going to happen. Chazal were concerned that the whole concept of para aduma, which is mechatas, the waters of the para aduma, is going to be totally forgotten. Why, Abbas, I think about this. Because the truth is, remember again, under normal circumstances, in order to remedy tumas meis, in order to remedy ritual impurity from a corpse, you need para aduma. Well, the truth is, there's something much easier and much faster than para aduma, which is what? Break the kli, repair the kli, and you're good to go. Break the kli, the tumah, old tumah goes away. Repair the kli, it's a brand new utensil, no more tumah. Chazal were concerned that if this type of mechanism were permitted, that a person, that mamish, the entire essence of paraduma would be fundamentally forgotten. Therefore, the rabbis legislated that if you have a utensil that is tameh, and then you, quote unquote, break it, and then you repair it, the old tumah comes back. Incredible. To which the Gemara says, "Hani chaleman damar lo lechala tumas amru." So, both say this approach makes sense if you say that the rabbinic enactment of the restoration of tuma yishana only applies to tumas meis. Then, Rabbi say, I understand this is all about safeguarding the practice of para aduma. Ela l'tu, as the Gemara says, so Shapir eleman da amru lechala tumas amru ma'ika l'neimar. But I will say, one second, there's an opinion that says that in fact the rabbis legislated that old tumah should return for any type of tumah. It doesn't matter what type of tumah the kli contracted. The rabbi said that if you have a kli that's tameh, you break it and then you repair it, the old tumah comes back. So if that's the case, again, the Gemara says, Michael Amir, I'm supposed to see what's happening over here. Apparently, we have a fundamental machlokes as to what type of tumah this rabbinic enactment of tumah yishana applies to. So there's an opinion that says it only applies to tumas meis. So I'll say, if you say it only applies to tumas meis, then this gemara makes sense. Because what are Chazal nervous about? Chazal were concerned that the whole institution of para aduma is going to be forgotten. So what did they say? They said that halacha lemaisa, if your kli contracts tumah from tumas meis, and you break the kli, and you repair the kli, the old tumah comes back. Because we don't want you to forget about para aduma. But if that's the approach, then it makes sense to say that tumah yishana only applies to tumas meis, because it's only tumas meis that is connected to paraduma. But what about the opinion that says that the rabbinic legislation of the restoration of tumah yishana applies to all forms of tumah? We'll say if that's the case, then what's the svara? Why would Chazal have legislated Tuma Yishana? To which the Gemara says, Abaye, Gezeira Shema lo yikaben b'chdei tarasa. Oh, we'll say, Abaye says, I'll tell you why. There was a concern that a person will not, quote-unquote, break the kli sufficiently. In other words, I will say, in order for this concept to work, in order for a utensil to lose its tumah, what has to happen? You have to break the utensil. What does it mean to break the utensil? You have to effectively render it unfit for use as a utensil. The rabbis were concerned that a person is going to employ this mechanism, and what's going to happen? They're not going to break it sufficiently. That's what they're concerned about. They're just not going to break it. They're going to make a hole, but the hole's not going to be big enough. So meanwhile, a person is going to make a hole in the utensil. They're going to think the utensil is purified, but in fact, they're wrong. It's not purified. And I will say, then what happens? A person is utilizing a kli that is really still tame. Therefore, Chazal legislated, and they said, in all cases of tumah, if you break the kli and you repair the kli regains its old tumah. Because what's at the end of the day, what do Chazal really want you to do? They want you to take the kli to the mikvah. That's really what they want. They don't want people going ahead and relying on this breakage mechanism. They want you taking the kli to the mikvah because that is a sure way in which your kli will become tahar. Relying on people to break it, quote unquote, leaves room for human error. The Gemara says, that was Abaye. Rava Amar Gzer Shema Yomru Tvila Bas Yoma Olala. We'll say, interesting enough, Rava says, the other concern is people may come to say that once you immerse a kli in the mikvah, it is usable that immediate day, and you don't have to wait until the evening. Look at Rashi, Bas Yoma, below Her of Shemesh. Sha'aroa Shenitmu Mishtam Shibahem Bobayom. So this is very interesting. Rava says, here's the concern. Let's say Reuven has a utensil which became tame. Reuven's utensil becomes tame. So Rava says, he goes ahead, he breaks it, makes a hole in it, and then repairs it. So once he breaks it and repairs it, technically speaking, it becomes usable immediately. What's the concern? So Shimon knows that Reuven's utensil became tame. Now, then 2 hours later, he sees Shimon utilizing that very utensil. Now, what he doesn't know is that Shimon broke it and repaired it. For all he knows, right? For all Shimon knows, he thinks that Reuven just took it to the mikvah and is using it now. And I will say, for certain types of tumah, it's not just enough to go ahead and take it to the mikvah, but rather what? You have to go ahead and wait until nightfall. So the concern, Rava says, is that we've let people use this mechanism of breaking and repairing, people may come to think that which allows for immediate use, people may think that even after immersing in the mikvah, it is good for immediate use as well. So we'll say, so therefore again, two different versions. So we'll say, so first of all, we have over here is as follows. What we have over here is that halacha l'maisa, breaking a utensil takes away its tumah, and repairing it makes it into a new utensil with absolutely no tumah. The rabbis come along and they legislate that the old tumah returns. Now the truth is, even in this is a machlokes. Some say that only applies to tumas hames. Because the concern over here is the rabbis put back the old tumah in order to safeguard para aduma. According to the second approach, however, no. This idea of tumah yishana applies to all forms of tumah. Why would the rabbis go ahead and reimpose tumah yishana by other forms of tumah? So machlokes, Abai says, because we're concerned that people aren't going to make the necessary breakage in the kli. And therefore, again, Chazal said tumah yishana comes back because you want people ultimately to go ahead and take that kli to the mikvah. Rava says, there's a concern that people will get confused between breakage and immersion. Breakage works ultimately instantaneously. Immersion sometimes requires sunset. People don't always know who's doing what. If they see someone using a kli that was tame that very day, they may come to think that all you need to do is take it to the mikvah and you don't have to wait for sunset. Yet by some forms of tumah, mikvah is not enough. You have to wait for nightfall as well. To which the Gemara says, "Ma'amin, I suppose, what's the practical difference in afkumina between Abaye and Rava?" So, ibayis ima dirat svinu mitzraf. So some say that the nafkumina between these two opinions ultimately could be in a situation where you flattened the kli. So, both say, so again, if you flattened the kli, there's no real concern that not making the hole big enough, because ultimately, again, the kli is totally flattened. But yet, if the concern is that people will see you using it instantaneously, and they may come to go ahead and think that you could use it after the mikveh instantaneously, that reason may still apply. Rashi actually has two girsos over here, and in Rashi's two opinions, Rashi goes both ways. He understands it both according. I mean, he floats two different opinions as to what the nafkamina may be, or I should say, you know, the ikah benayhu. For if you look at Rashi, he says tratzfinu mitzraf herikim meshibran kulan kimo macholos or tufa shemalo ikah ben aleka. Suppose I say, so again, if you're flattening the kli, there's no concern that you're not going to pierce it enough because it's mamish flattened. But there's still going to be the concern that people will see you instantaneously using the utensil and may confuse this case with the mikvah. Fine. So bottom line, halacha l'maisa, what comes out is as follows. If the kli contracts tumas mace, then again it's clear that even if you go out and you break the kli and reforge the kli is still tame, rabbinically, tuma yishana. Why did the rabbis legislate that? At a way to safeguard the halachos of para aduma. But even if the kli contracts other forms of tuma, halacha lamaisa, if you break it and repair it, the old tuma still comes back as well. Why is that? Abaye says either out of concern that you're not going to break the kli sufficiently, or rather because you may confuse the halachos of breakage with the halachos of tefillah in a mikvah. Either way, Rabbi said, that's what it means when we say that in the attic of Chizkiah ben Garon that they went ahead and legislated that kli matachos are mekabel tuma. Obviously, the essence that a metal utensil is mekabel tuma, that's the oraisa. What the rabbis legislated was the restoration of tuma yeshana. That even though when you break the kli, technically speaking, former tuma goes away, and when you reforge it, it's a brand new kli that is no longer have any tuma. The rabbis legislated that the old tuma comes back. Beautiful. Weiter. V'idach mai. I won't say so. Again, what are some of the other 18 enactments? So it's a very interesting halacha. V'idach mai. This nan. Hameniach kelim tachas atzina lekabel me'mei geshamim. So we'll say, if you go ahead and you place utensils underneath a pipe. So we'll say, this is talking about mikvah. Imagine for a moment you have rainwater coming down. The rainwater flows through the pipe into the mikvah. So we'll say, so now we're talking about over here is what happens if you put a utensil underneath the pipe in order to receive the rainwater, and then you're going to take the water from that utensil and pour it into the mikvah. So what's the halacha? So the Gemara says, Echad kelim gedolim ve'echad kelim ketanim afilu klei anavim klei adamo klei gelolim poslin as hamikvah. So Rabbi says, the halacha is as follows. In order for water to be fit to be used as a mikvah, not only does it have to be rainwater, but it can never be contained in a utensil. Once it's contained in a utensil, that's called mayim she'uvin. That's called drawn water. I see, you'll say to yourself, but 1 second, isn't the pipe that, let's say there's a pipe that's attached to a roof. It rains down on the roof. The roof, right, the water siphoned through the pipe. The pipe goes into the mikvah. Isn't the pipe a kli? So Rashi gives two interpretations. He says, no, possibility number one is that the piece of wood which served as the pipe was first affixed to the ground and then subsequently hollowed out. Because it was attached to the ground to become the chubul karka, once it's mechubul karka, it's like karka, and then you subsequently hollow it out. Therefore, again, it's not a kli. Other possibilities, because the pipe is open on two sides, it doesn't have the ability to retain anything. Therefore, it's not a kli. Either way, what's happening over here is as follows. If the water flows through the pipe and goes through into a utensil, once it's in that utensil, and the Gemara points out, even if this is the type of utensil which itself is not mekabel tuma, nevertheless, these waters become unfit for use in a mikvah because halacha lemaisa, they are now considered to be drawn water, mayim she'uvin, just simply by dint of the fact that they are now inside of the utensil. Echad hamaniach ve'echad hashokheach. And this is true whether you intentionally placed the utensil down there or you forgot the utensil there. Either way, halacha lemaisa, any water that's inside of the utensil, whether you intentionally placed it there or you forgot it there, invalidates the mikvah. These are the words of Beis Shammai. Ubeisila metarin b'shokheach. Beis Shammai, on the other hand, says that if you forgot a utensil there, therefore there's no das, if there's no das, then halacha lemaisa, the accumulation of the water in this utensil does not go ahead and in any way invalidate the mikvah. So we'll say, so this is incredible. Look, Rashi says, "Metarin to shochiach lo chashiva sheiva hovel lekach miskavin." Because we'll say, at the end of the day, when you forget something inside of the utensil, this is not called mayim sheuvin because there was no kavana. So in other words, according to Beis Hillel, there has to be some basic level of kavana to gather the water in this utensil. But if you just forgot the utensil there, then that water in that utensil does not have the status of drawn water and therefore can be used for the mikvah. Amar Rabbi Meir. So Rabbi Meir says, Nimnu v'gamru, nimnu v'rabu b'sham Beis Hillel. So Rabbi Meir says that Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel in this particular matter, and therefore halacha lemaisa, we passing like Beis Shammai, whether you intentionally placed the utensil there or you forgot the utensil there, any waters inside of that utensil will be considered to be mayim shuvin, drawn water, and it will invalidate the mikvah. So the Gemara says, however, umodin Beis Shammai b'shochiach b'chotzer shehutar. But ultimately, again, Beis Shammai will agree that if you forget a utensil in a chotzer, in a courtyard, that halacha lemaisa, any water that flows into there ultimately will not be invalid for use in a mikvah. Look at Rashi b'chatzer, shelo tachas satzinor, v'nismali min ha-notfin, v'naflu l'mikvah shutar. T'bemaniach tachas satzinor, u'kishanitim b'shaz kishor avim. So we'll listen to this. So apparently, Rabbi Meir says that Beis Shammai will agree with the case of a plate or a utensil that was placed in the chatzer, not necessarily underneath a pipe, but let's say underneath a roof where rainwater is trickling off, where clearly, again, I will say, a person that placement of the plate is not premeditated in any fashion. Because it's not premeditated in any fashion, therefore, halacha lemaisa, any water contained or accumulated in that plate will not invalidate the mikvah. In other words, I will say, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is as follows. Beis Shammai in general holds that whether you had kavan or didn't have kavan is irrelevant. If the rainwater accumulates in a clean, in a utensil, that water has the status of drawn water and therefore is invalid for a mikvah. Or Rabbi Meir is suggesting, Beis Hillel on the other hand holds that halacha lemaisa, if you forgot a utensil somewhere and that utensil accumulates rainwater, halacha lemaisa, that water is not mayim shuvin, that water is not drawn water because you didn't have kavana and therefore be kasha for a mikvah. Rabbi Meir suggests that there is even one case where Beis Shammai would agree. What's the one case? Where you forgot a utensil, little like in the middle of the courtyard. It's not placed underneath the mikvah pipe or anything else, it's just there. So in that case, where there's clearly no kavana for anything, even Beis Shammai would agree that halacha lemaisa, the water inside that utensil is not mayim shuvin. So the Gemara goes on, Am Rabbi Yossi, adayin machlokes bimkomo medes. So Rabbi Yossi says, it's not true. The machlokes is still going on. In other words, I think Gemara wanted to say before that really this, and originally there was machlokes, and then Beis Shammai outnumbered Beis Hillel. Now the Gemara is suggesting, Rabbi Yossi is suggesting that machlokes is still going on. So the Gemara says, Amri, hakom odim, listen to this, hakom odim kishenicham b'shas kishra nadim tenayim, everyone agrees that if you placed the utensil underneath the pipe at a time where the clouds were gathering. Now, so what does that mean? The clouds are gathering, meaning you're anticipating rainfall. So everyone agrees that if you go ahead and you place the utensil underneath the pipe that takes rainwater to the mikvah, and you place the utensil there at a time where halacha lemaisa, the clouds are gathering, it's about to rain, everyone agrees tamei. Now we'll say tamei means that the water, when it subsequently rains and the water from the pipe goes into the utensil, that those waters are invalid for a mikvah, for mayim, as mayim shuvin, as drawn water. Because since you placed the plate underneath the pipe at a time when the clouds were gathering, that's kavana, that's intent. B'shas pizra avim. But if you placed the plate underneath the pipe at a time where there are no clouds, or literally scattering of the clouds. In other words, there's a beautiful sunny day outside. Everyone agrees that what? That halacha lemaisa, even if later on it rains and the rainwater gathers inside that plate, that utensil, That water is fine. It can be used for a mikvah. That's not called mayim shuvim because there's no specific intent. So where's the machlokes? Here we go. Lo nechloku elo shenichim b'shas ki shir avim. The machlokes is as follows. In a situation halacha lemaisa, where what? Where you went ahead and you gathered them together. I'm sorry, you placed the plate underneath the pipe at a time where the clouds were gathering, so it looked like it was going to rain. Then the clouds scattered. And then subsequently it became cloudy again. And then it rained. So what says, you hear what happened over here? You placed the paved plate there, the utensil there, in anticipation of the rain. Then it became sunny. Then sometime later on, it rained and water accumulated in the utensil. So what says, now the shaila is, what's the status of the water in the utensil? Mar savar bat lamach shavto. So one opinion said that halacha lemaisa, his machshava's bottle. Why? Because his machshava was at the original time that the clouds gathered. But remember again, subsequently the clouds scattered. At that point in time, his machshava, his intent to gather the rain in the utensil is bottle. And therefore, even though subsequently it rained, there's no specific intent to gather a liquid in the utensil for the subsequent rainfall. Therefore, the water that ultimately pools in that utensil is not called mayim shuvin, and therefore is fit for the mikvah. Umar savar lo batla machshavto. And the other opinion says, no, since he originally put that utensil there to gather rainwater, the fact that halacha lemaisa, it didn't gather it now, but only gathered it at a later time, is not mevatel his das. His das was to gather rainwater. Did he gather rainwater? Yes. The fact that it didn't happen when he originally thought, but it happened 2 hours, 3 days later, it doesn't make a difference. That's called mayim shuvin and pasul for the mikvah. So therefore again, just to understand, remember the Gemara is trying to understand what are the other enactments. So the other enactment that then happened over here was as follows. Another one of the enactments was that if you go ahead and you place a utensil underneath the pipe and you place it there. So remember, everyone agrees, if you placed it there at the time when the storm clouds were gathering and it subsequently rained and water accumulated in that utensil, everyone agrees that that water is invalid. Everyone also agrees that if you put the utensil out and it's bright and sunny and then sometime later on it rains and water gathers in there, everyone agrees that that water inside the utensil is perfectly fit for the mikvah, because placing the utensil down when it's sunny is an irrelevant act. Where's the machlokes? The machlokes is, you put the utensil down when it was cloudy, about to rain, so your intention was to gather the water, but then the clouds dispersed, it became sunny, and sometime later on it became cloudy again, and then it rained. That's the machlokes Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai says that water is invalid for a mikvah. That's called drawn water, because you had initial intent to place it down there to go ahead and accumulate water. Beis Hillel says that water is totally fine. Why? Because your initial intent was bottle. Why was your initial intent bottle? Because ultimately, again, you put it down when the clouds were gathering, but then the sun came out. Once the sun comes out, your original act is void. It's no longer meaningful. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, the water that gathers in there is going to be bottle. So therefore, Abbas, what the Mishnah is telling us is this is a machlokes Beis Shammai Beis Hillel, and Beis Shammai won out over Beis Hillel. And therefore, halacha lemaisa, in a case where you place the utensil down by the pipe at a time where what? The clouds were gathered, and then the clouds subsequently dispersed, became sunny, and then they gathered again. It rained, and water pooled in the utensil. In the attic of Hananya ben Chizkiah, they decided that the halacha is like Beis Shammai, namely that water is called Mayim Shuvin and unfit for the mikvah. So the Gemara says, let's finish. But according to Rabbi Yossi, who says that they did not decide this issue, and this issue is still a point of contention between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, so knew what's part of the 18 enactments. The Gemara says, there is a particular machlokes that is missing. So what are you supplemented with? According to Rabbi Yossi, who holds that they did not decide this case regarding the utensil underneath the pipe. They did not decide that case. Ultimately, again, in the attic of Chizkiah ben Garon. So therefore, I will say, what is part of the list? was part of the list is the case of Benos Kusim Nidos Marisas Rosei. Those of you who are with us for the last cycle, remember this, we had this in Emesechas Nida, namely that Chazal legislated that the daughters of Kusim, remember again, the Kusim were this tribe, this nation resettled in Eretz Yisrael by Shalmaneser, the king of Ashur. The Kusim converted, but their status of conversion was always subject to some level of debate and dispute. So Rosei, so according to Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, this is according to Rabbi Yossi, in the attic of Chizkiah ben Garon, they decided that Kusi girls have the status of Nidos from the time they are born. That the rabbis imposed essentially this status of Tumah on Kusi girls from the time that they are born. That this halacha, so essentially what Chazal did is they imposed a level of Tumah on Kusi girls from the moment of birth. From the moment of birth. And this halacha was decided ultimately because it was, and this was done out of a safeguard mechanism because the Kusim were not vigilant with the laws of Tumah and Tara. So therefore, in order to make the general populace aware of the lack of vigilance of Tumah and Tara on the part of the Kusim, so the rabbis imposed different levels of Tumah on the Kusim. This particular level of Tumah is that their girls are considered to be Nidos from the time of birth. So according to Rabbi Yossi, who says that they did not resolve Machlokis Beshan Beisilal regarding the liquid that comes from the pipe and pools in the utensil, they did resolve ultimately this halacha that the daughters of Kusim are considered to be Nidos from the times of their birth. All right, Rabbosei Shekayach, we'll stop over here. Again, we're still continuing with this sugya of the 18 enactments tomorrow, B'Shah Tovah Mitzlachos, scheduled for tomorrow, Mesilas Hashem at 5:45, Daf Yomi 5:55, Shacharis at 6:45. Wishing everyone a beautiful and meaningful day. Mincha tonight in our Zoom minyan will be at 7:10 p.m. Yasher Koach, and have a great day.
Hey, Rebbe, it's Jeremy.
Hi, Jeremy. Shalom Aleichem. How are you?